Hey folks, it's Mike from Profiling Evil. I've been studying criminal behavior for more than 40 years, and one of my favorite research tools is Truth Finder. It's online, and you're not going to believe the information stored there. So if you want to know more about that new neighbor, your babysitter, or your online date, give Truth Finder a try. I'm including a special link below with special discount pricing, but you got to click the link and enter EVIL10 at checkout. Now, we're an affiliate, which means we get a small commission, but you can cancel at any time. Hey folks, it's a chilly night here in Hilldale, Utah, and I'm standing outside of the home of convicted child molester and self-proclaimed prophet of the FLDS, Warren Jeffs. Now, he's sitting in a Texas prison, but this is the place that he planned on putting his 87-plus wives and all his children. His former bodyguard invited me to come and spend the night. At one point, we were formidable enemies as I worked for the Attorney General trying to put Warren Jeffs in prison. Today, we've got a little different relationship. You're going to want to stick around for this episode. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to Profiling Evil Live. I'm Mike King, and it's really a pleasure to be with all of you. It's nice to see so many of you starting to pile in already. I have a special guest joining me in just a moment, but I wanted to shout out a few thank yous. First, best wishes to my in-house counsel, Michelle Morris, who's recovering from COVID. Looked like she braved the internet tonight and jumped on. Thanks to Robin Walsh and Stephanie C., Mary Howard, thank you. Gosh, just a lot of you piling in. And this is going to be kind of interesting. I'm sitting inside of Warren Jeffs' home, and I don't know that you understand how significant this is, but I'm going to bring in a former member of the FLDS and a great friend of mine, Sam Zitting Weissum. And he is the creator with his wife, Melissa, of Growing Up in Polygamy. Sam, how you doing, brother?
Hey, good. Thanks for having me on. Happy to be here. No, it's
great to have you on. So tell me, what do you think of me sitting in Warren Jeffs' house? And what was that like for a kid growing up to ever have an audience with Warren Jeffs after all of the coercive mind control you went through as a child?
Yes. Well, first of all, I'm glad it's you sitting in his home and not me. No, that's pretty surreal that you're sitting in that. I believe that was a home he had built, but I don't believe he personally ever lived there where you're currently in.
You know, it's really interesting because I'm going to show some video of the home. I flew it with my drone today and I walked around quite a bit. The walls are surrounding this particular home are about 2 feet thick and 18 feet high. And it's interesting to me because there are the same dimensions of the prison where he's sitting. And he actually came up with these revelations to build this home while he was sitting in prison with this idea that he was going to somehow be sprung based on the prayers of all of his followers, and that he would return and reign in glory and continue to run and evade the child sex assault charges that he's spending life in prison for. So it's really kind of interesting because, in my opinion, he's built a home that's very much like a prison.
Yes, yes. But, man, back in those days, I mean, the home that you're currently at, I looked at it as a great place that he had built because the need, I felt that he had this need to hide from the authorities and from the outside wicked world. And so for me, it didn't really look like, to now it kind of looks like a prison, right? You have these big walls surrounding it. But during that time, it was a very almost faith promoting thing for me to see that we had these places that the leaders could go to hide from authorities. But the interesting thing about that is I didn't look at that as a negative thing. I looked at it as the outside authorities, the law enforcement outsiders, you included at that time, of course, were these evil people trying to attack the Church of God. That was the mindset behind it. And so it was almost like an honor or a privilege to be a part of a community that had a place like that people could go in and get away from the so-called evil people.
You know, that's really interesting because, as you well know, I spent a career pursuing serial predators and cult behavior, coercive mind control. And there are the cults I'm talking about are destructive cults. And there are pieces and parts of cults. Being a Dallas Cowboy fan is a cult, but that doesn't mean it's destructive in nature. Right. It might be, I guess, if you vote for Washington or something else. But bottom line is, last night on your show, I weighed in with a little bit of information where I said there's a big difference and a difference that I found investigating these kinds of cults, closed society cults like the FLDS or newer cults that are just kind of emerging. And that difference is that it was easier for me to infiltrate and upset or disrupt mind and thought processes in convert groups where people were new to the ideology. They had a special moment and all of a sudden they thought, this person is really inspired and I'm going to follow him.
Right.
Versus what you experienced in what I call and what I termed in the ritual report I did for the state of generational cults, people who are raised in an ideology and taught from their infancy to believe in a certain kind of system. What are your thoughts there?
No, that makes perfect sense. It was when you're raised in something like the FLDS, as I was, it's all I knew, and I had no reason to think anything else. It made perfect sense to me because it was what I was taught to believe as young as I can remember. And so it made perfect sense. And I had convinced myself that these people like Warren Jeffs, and when I was really young, it was his father, Rulon Jeffs, that was the prophet. And I had convinced myself so fully that they were telling the truth and that they were men of God, that when I would meet them in person or shake their hand, I thought I was feeling a very, very strong power and spirit coming from them, as though they were acting as God on this earth. And so it was a very strong power that I felt from them because of the way I was taught to believe them. So it definitely started at a very young age for me.
Yeah, that I appreciate you sharing that, Sam, because it's really interesting. Faiths that take away the responsibility of the member to resolve in their own mind whether things are right or wrong, to have connection with their God, to be able to seek inspiration and pray. People that are kind of instructed and told exactly how to think and what to do, they aren't critical thinkers. And those who are not critical thinkers oftentimes fall prey to these kinds of coercive behaviors.
Right. Yes. It was, I don't know if I should say it was easy, but it was definitely something that I fell into. And it took me, even after I left at age 18, I left for a few different reasons, which we could get into, but I don't want to take over your show here. But one of those reasons, or even after I did leave, and one of the main reasons was because I found out that people outside of the community were good people. But it still took me months and even years to fully switch my mindset. You know, I would still wait for the moment where Warren Jeffs would appear around a corner and say, "Ha, what are you doing? I caught you." You know, I don't know. It was something that was so ingrained in my mind that I was nervous that I would be smitten by God somehow for years after, even after leaving the community.
Last night, you said something that really triggered a memory that I had as I was writing my book, Deceived, on the Zion Society cult. During those interviews, I actually spoke to someone who hadn't heard or spoken to this self-proclaimed prophet who eventually died in prison in my particular case. But she was very, very wrapped up in the ideology. And I was interviewing her for the book, and at one point, I pulled out an audio recording I had of this self-proclaimed prophet in this particular cult, and I played it for her, and she started shaking and crying and fell completely apart hearing his voice. And last wow. night you mentioned hearing a recording of Warren Jeffs singing. And what did that do to you?
Well, as many people know, the power of song is something that is, it's hard to explain, but when you hear a certain song, it can make you feel feelings, whether it's you tear up with emotion or happy feelings or sad feelings. But when it came to the songs of Warren Jeffs, those were almost forced upon us. In so many ways, we were supposed to listen to these songs that he would have sung by other people or he himself was singing. I'm talking, we would drive from work and back every day listening to these CDs that he had made. We would wake up in the morning with them, with the songs throughout the house over the speakers. And in the moment when I was there, I thought, wow, what a peaceful, wonderful feeling that I'm feeling, the songs that are being sung. And I had almost all of the words memorized. And I thought that it was this spiritual thing that I was experiencing. But now I turn on, I mean, it was maybe a year or two ago that Melissa was curious about these. And she turned one of them on, and the voice and the song immediately took me back to those days. And I almost had to shake myself loose from wanting to believe that again because of the power that those songs had over me.
That's incredible, Sam. And I'm sorry that, you know, we hear people who say that was a triggering moment, something that was said on a show or something like that. And this is an example of what those triggering moments can be like. I want to just look at a couple of comments in the chat box as we're going through for a minute. Excuse me. And I know that your time is a little limited. I sprung this on you 2 minutes ago. We were firming up something that you and I are doing tomorrow. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Sure.
And I said, heck, come on the show. And,
hey, happy to do it.
I tried to get Sam, by the way, folks, and his wife, Melissa, to come and stay in Warren Jeff's house with me tonight, but he just wouldn't do it. And
but you know, for some reason I have no desire to stay there, but I don't want any feelings to come flooding back that maybe are unwanted if I were to stay there.
I think you made a very wise choice, my friend, because it is eerily strange. You know, the front desk is occupied by polygamists and trying to talk to them with a worldly approach is painfully awkward for both sides. Right. Gives me flashbacks to when I was in this community on a regular basis with the Attorney General's office. I'd walk into the little hardware store and nobody would talk to me. And it was like Satan himself had walked in to the building. And of course, the fact that I had a badge on my belt didn't help any.
No,
either,
but not anyway, at all.
Lala B says, oh my gosh, I'm weirdly excited for this episode. But that said, I don't know if I could do it. let's see. Smillin Wolfette says, I'm super excited. Just saw this pop up. Sherry Quinley, nice. I love having Mike back with Lives. Yeah, it's fun to get back. Here's one I do want to pop up. New subscriber, finding Mike and his information videos kind of fascinating. That's nice. Hopefully I won't bore you over time. Vanessa says, this is going to be interesting. I honestly never thought about it, but it's kind of scary when I sit and think about it. I don't think I could do it. It's like one big, creepy, haunted house. Good luck.
Yeah.
You're nodding your head, Sam.
Yeah, I'm just saying yes. Good luck.
Michelle is, this is a wonderful attorney, and I call her my in-house counsel. Sam, if you ever get a moment, and folks, anybody that's listening, go back and watch my video with Michelle Morris on, it's titled "My A Serial Killer Read Bedtime Stories to Me." And when this girl was a little girl, her dad was a Texas Ranger, And on one particular night, he had a serial killer in his car that he was taking out to look for dead bodies. The guy was going to tell him where he'd buried some people. Wow. And this is, you know, years ago, but the guy missed dinner and they were coming back and he was telling his wife about it. She said, "You bring him by and let's feed him." Kind of the old Andy Griffin show kind of a feeling. He brought him out, sat him on the porch and said to his wife, "Bring her some food out." And her mother wouldn't have that, said, "You bring him in and we're going to treat him like a human being." Wow, hats off to her. But before long, this little tyke, who now is an attorney and Michelle here, wandered down, climbed on his lap, gave him a book and said, "I need you to read me a story." And this serial killer read her a bedtime story. So,
wow.
great podcast. Please go back and watch that, folks. And best to you, Michelle. Let's see. Let me catch up on a couple of these, and then I'm going to start off with a little bit of something that I want you to listen to because I want your opinion on it. It's my memory. Again, I chased the FLDS leadership through Warren and Rulon. I wasn't doing cults when Johnson was the prophet. Mm-hmm. But I've known this community and been in it for many years. In fact, I think I told you tomorrow I want to talk about this, but I think I told you about the time I came through town with my family in the van because I thought maybe that would help me be less conspicuous. And we pulled up down by the old elk pens that you had, and we were driving by, and there was a group of boys, and one of them looked suspiciously like you, but they all flipped us off and swore at us. So.
I would never do something like that, so it wasn't me.
Okay.
Sounds accurate to me. I'm not super up to date or knowledgeable about every little aspect of the beginnings of the church. You know, I do know bits and pieces there. I know that my grandfather was very much involved. I know that there was the Council of Friends, as it was called, that kind of started out this church. And in the beginning, there wasn't really a prophet that was in charge of everything and that could control everything if he decided to. There was this council that everything had to be decided together. And so it was over the years where there became this one man as the prophet. And I believe that the first one to do that was Leroy Johnson, and then Rulon Jeffs, yeah. And then Warren Jeffs.
In fact, if I remember that correctly, and you're probably more accurate than I am, Johnson started talking this idea, but Rulon was the one who really embraced it. And that was after that schism that separated and pushed Centennial Park. Another fundamental group broke off, folks, and they left and went over just south of this area that we're talking about. And I'm going to show you some video of that area in a moment. In fact, I think they must be a lot wealthier with that mortgage company than the FLDS, Sam.
Yes, they're the rich fundamentalists.
Yeah, it is evident, isn't it?
Yeah.
But then Rulon started talking about it, but then it was Rulon who finally took the title of prophet that no leader before him had done.
Yes. Yes, that's a good point. And there in Centennial Park, the ones that split off after the death of Leroy Johnson, they still to this day don't have one prophet. They have the council or the brotherhood, and they're still a president of the council. They're still the one that's technically in charge, but he doesn't consider himself a prophet.
Yeah. Well, this is really interesting. So then Rulon goes through... I have a friend that goes by Rulon, and so I keep saying Rulon for Rulon. But Rulon goes through his life. He dies in, was it 2002 that he died?
That sounds right, yes.
And that was probably a disastrous final couple of years because he predicted that the world, and Warren predicted that the world would come to an end with Y2K or 2000. And that's when the FLDS would be ushered into greatness, much like biblical times when the city of Enoch was lifted up and it didn't happen. And the reason it didn't happen, Well, first, why don't you tell me if you remember what the reasoning was that Ruland said the reason it didn't happen?
Well, so there were multiple times and there still is another time currently to come, but there were multiple times prophesied that it was going to be the end. And it was 2000, and then it was 2002, and then it was 2004, I believe. And so there were all of these dates that they kept setting. And each time when it didn't happen, they blamed it on the members of the church. They said, Jesus Christ was ready. It was time. It was time for this to happen. But you as members weren't faithful enough. You weren't obedient enough. It was your fault that it didn't happen. And that would put fear into us that we were the reason that the second coming couldn't happen. And it was all our fault. And so we would try even that much harder to try to be obedient and try to do what we were told.
That is just absolutely maddening, because it is the same thing that happens in all other cults. And that's another thing I used to say, is that as different as these cults would like to be, they're very much the same in ideology. And when something doesn't hit a predictive date, it's never the prophet's fault for calling the wrong date. It's always the members who aren't worthy enough. And God's going to give you one more chance to get in line, but boy, you're running out of time.
Right. Exactly.
Sam, I know you've got to go. Anything you want to say about tomorrow, or we'll get you back, because you and I are going to be doing a number of shows just based on what we talk about tomorrow.
Yes. Well, I'm looking forward to it. There are a lot of key locations that we're planning on visiting, and each of these locations have a lot of significance to me personally, just because I was raised around these areas. A lot of these areas I spent a lot of time at. And so there's just a lot of information to discuss there. And I'm very much looking forward to see what you have to share in each of these locations and your experiences there as well.
Well, it's going to be great. I'll see you in the morning, and best wishes. Now, have you already made the drive? Are you here in
I'm halfway area? There. I'm not quite. I'm working my way.
All right. We'll see you in the morning. Thanks so much for joining. Folks, make sure you shout out to Sam there and check out his channel, Growing Up in Polygamy. He and Melissa do a wonderful job, and it's just been a blast knowing you.
You as well, Mike. Thank you so much. We'll see you in the morning.
See you in the morning. I'm hoping early in the morning to get back into the caves. Again, these secret caves, very few people ever had access to, just the leadership of the FLDS Church. They were filled with all kinds of supplies, including weapons and explosives. In fact, there's a vault inside the cave for the explosives. There are bathrooms with porcelain fixtures in a men's bathroom and a women's bathroom inside these caves. They're massive and go way back in. And a few years ago, I was taken in by the former bodyguard to the prophets, and he allowed me to shoot just a little bit of video, which I posted on Profiling Evil. You can go back, just look up in the playlist FLDS or Mike the Investigator Goes to the Polygamous Community or something like that, and you'll catch some of that video. But I'm hoping early in the morning that I'll be able to get back into those. We're talking about that tonight, and we'll see whether that really comes about. So there you go, folks. Thanks. Kind of surreal being here. Again, I spent a career trying to get in places just like this, and now I guess things have gone full circle. And hopefully Warren Jeffs and people like him continue to get put in prison, and people get a chance to get a little bit of maybe fresh air and pull away, just like Sam, who we talked to at the beginning of the show. I'm going to be meeting with Sam tomorrow. We're going to travel around to a couple places. We're going to start at Maxwell Park, and from there we're going to go to the Baby Cemetery. When we leave the Baby Cemetery, we're going to go over to Hilldale City Hall, where his dad was the mayor of this community for many, many years, and was, again, someone that I argued with over and again as I tried to bring child protection into the community. From there, we'll come by a secret spot, maybe, that I'll be able to show the secret caves. Although I won't be taking Sam there, unfortunately. He's never seen him. Grew up in this community, and he heard the ghost stories as well, but could never go in them. And then we're going to make our way down to the zoo, look at the zoo. We'll make it over to the Isaac Cemetery and look at the cemetery a little bit. Then we're going to go to Warren Jeff's offices and talk a little there and make our way out to Centennial Park and a whole bunch of stuff in between. So we're going to have a little bit of fun. And folks, from all of us at Profiling Evil, thanks so much for your support. We'll see you soon at the next crime scene. Hey folks, it's Mike from Profiling Evil. I've been studying criminal behavior for more than 40 years, and one of my favorite research tools is TruthFinder. It's online, and you're not going to believe the information stored there. So if you want to know more about that new neighbor, your babysitter, or your online date, give TruthFinder a try. I'm including a special link below with special discount pricing, but you got to click the link and enter EVIL10 at checkout. Now, we're an affiliate, which means we get a small commission, but you can cancel at any time.